Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 15 of the Crick Picks podcast. I'm Behram Kazi, who you can find at DefMango, and with me are Estelle Vasudevan, who you can find at Estelle_Vasude, the number one, and Jared Kimber, who you can find absolutely everywhere at @JaredKimber. And what we do in this podcast is we take any random topic within cricket and we kind of draft a top five from within that category. And you've probably watched a few episodes by now, but if you haven't, we do a snake-style draft in which we pick in the order of 1, 2, 3, then 3, 2, 1. So first pick that then gets to go, you know, it takes a while for them to have another pick again. And I'm lucky because I'm number one pick today. And the topic is test wicketkeepers. And this will give me a big edge to win the whole goddamn thing because I feel like any sane person would pick Adam Gilchrist as their first pick. 416 dismissals in 96 test matches. A very acrobatic behind the stumps, a very, very safe pair of hands. And he revolutionized the wicketkeeper role, I feel, in cricket, because after Gilchrist, everyone felt like they needed a wicketkeeper batter and not just someone who could keep wicket and not bat. So specialist wicketkeepers kind of sort of died down after that. And I mean, Gilchrist wasn't just some guy who could bat. This was someone who struck at a strike rate of nearly 82 in test cricket in that era, and also averaged 47.6 with 17 hundreds. Hobart 99 will haunt every Pakistan supporter for the rest of their lives. And Gilly, personally, growing up, was someone who absolutely captured my imagination. I love the guy. I still think that he's one of my favorite cricketers of all time. And he's just a fantastic bloke to top it off. So yeah, that I feel like that was going to be a few of your number one picks, right? Like, I mean, both of you maybe?
He's not number one on my list.
Ooh, of course he isn't.
Well, in part because, obviously you talked about his batting quite a bit. I didn't hear much about his wicket keeping in there, man. Is this best wicket keepers? I heard you say this is the best wicket keepers in Test cricket, and then you talked to me about batting for 5 minutes. I don't know.
He's taken some screamers, dude. I mean, like you can't say Gilly was a terrible wicket keeper. He was really, really good at that as well.
He was okay. It probably isn't the best 50 wicketkeepers purely with the gloves that has ever existed, though, is he? Like, I'm not having a go at him. Wicketkeeping has changed quite a bit. He's very athletic, and he was okay up at the stumps, but yeah, that's fine. Look, you've made your choice, and that's more than fine. If you want to be incorrect, sit there. No, I mean, most people would probably pick this. The biggest problem with this is that I find this really tough. Because I'm older than both of you, and I actually remember when people could wicketkeep. And so it's, you know, there is a philosophical argument to be had, and you did not have that argument. You just went, he's made a lot of runs!
I liked his keeping as well, but yeah, now I know what trajectory you're going to be taking. And I feel Estelle had him as number one as well. Her face suggests so.
Yeah, I had him number one, not because he made a lot of runs, but because he was my favorite cricketer growing up. So that's completely, different.
Baby Behram was inspired by Wasim, but I barely caught any of Wasim, right? So after that, it was Gilly until I fell in love with Sangha. So yeah, Gilchrist has to be there.
No, certainly one of my favorite players of all time. I don't have any issues with that. But I was just morally pointing out. But Estelle, you're up next.
Yeah. So
you want the moral quick picks, Jared? Is that what you're after?
Exactly. Always.
I'm gonna have a mix of, you know, the pure wicketkeeper picks and some of the run getters as well. My first one I'm picking solely because I don't want her to get picked. By the time the choice comes back to me, I'm going with Sarah Taylor. She played just 8 tests, but I
That's
think it's
why I didn't have her on my list.
I think it's widely accepted that she had some of the best hands in the game, right? And also, I took some inspiration from Jared, who you guys would have seen the episode on test captains we did, where he said if Susie Bates had played one game as a captain, he'd probably have picked her. So I thought, okay. 8 tests isn't bad. She didn't get too many runs, but I think it was always kind of widely accepted that she had some of the best hands in the game. So she is my number one.
That Sabira take behind the stumps down the leg side, that's a Sarah Taylor thing, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, she was a fantastic wicketkeeper, right? you know, I think it's more than fair. It's just a shame that she didn't keep more in Test cricket, because she probably would have kept up to the stumps even more in Test cricket. Mm. And, you know, it's a different kind of skill than one-day cricket, right? So it would have been really fascinating to see her do that. But, I mean, she was kind of on my long list, but I couldn't squeeze her in just because 8-10. I don't think she's at Susie Bates level genius where I could slip her in without – if she played 20 or 25, I think she might have got into my top five as well.
Which would be the most by any wicketkeeper batter in the women's game?
20, probably. 25. I mean, probably. There are almost no women who've ever played 25 matches. So it is an unfair thing. But this isn't a podcast about how unfair women's test cricket is. Go talk to Meg Lanning about that one. All right, I got back to back. I'm going to go Les Ames, who, if you think Adam Gilchrist was, like, it's funny, you said that, Adam Gilchrist came about and that was sort of the end of specialist wicketkeepers. The interesting thing is, it actually starts well before then. So Alex Stewart played before Adam Gilchrist did, and England tried a lot of wicketkeeping batters earlier, and Geoffrey Dujon wasn't the best wicketkeeper in the West Indies, right? So it had already started, but Gilchrist was the big bang. Les Ames is actually where this bang should have happened. Right? Hmm. Shyam was looking this up for our book the other day, because Les Ames ended up with a batting average in Test cricket of 43, right?
Oh, wow.
He was 2.16 times the normal wicketkeeping batting average of his era, right? Wow. There is one other wicketkeeper pre-World War II who averages 30.
You give me this entire rant about how I picked a batter and now you're picking the guy with the 2 point whatever multiplier on batting average?
But everyone also said Les Ames was the best wicketkeeper. So right, he stings twice. So I think that's why Les Ames, if we're being really realistic, Les Ames has to be number one, because he was actually picked because he was a great wicketkeeper who also happened to be a proper test batter. Whereas that's not probably the case with the players who come afterwards. And there's some really interesting players, but I think Les Ames is the best wicketkeeper batter of all time when you combine the two skill sets together. If Adam Gilchrist averaged twice of what other wicketkeepers did. Yeah, actually, Adam Gilchrist wouldn't have been that far off as well, if we're being honest. Yeah. But he probably would have been just slightly behind that mark, I would have thought. But Les Ames is just, everyone said he was a brilliant clubman. There was, there were probably specialists. Like, I think during Les Ames' career, I'm going to have to tell this story because I can't pick him because he never played a test match. But I'm assuming, I might have told Bayram this before, but I probably haven't told Estelle the story of Seymour Clark, who is one of my favorite cricketers of all time. Seymour Clark, Estelle, was not even a cricketer. He worked in the train industry. I think he was a train driver. And the train, like what happens in subcontinent, used to happen in England. There was a cricket team that was for the train company. And like, he turned up for one game and they said, we don't have a wicketkeeper. Do you want to try it? He had no idea what to do. And apparently from the first ball, no one had ever seen anyone take a ball behind the stumps like Seymour Clark, right? And he was so good that he was picked for Somerset, right? After being, this wicketkeeper. So he turns up to Somerset, buys himself a brand new bat, very important fact here, plays five games, and at the end of that year is offered a contract for the next year. And he goes, I don't know about this professional cricket thing. I've got this job with the trains. I don't want to give it up. But in those five games, if I remember correctly, did not make a run. He could not bat at all. But bought a brand new bat, and there were teams, I think it was in the second last or the last game, where teams were purposely bowling poorly to him to let him hit the ball so that hopefully he could score a run. And he didn't do it. So when I say wicketkeeping has changed, it has gone from literally people, that's the only thing they could do, all the way through. And Les Ames, I don't think really changed that, but certainly was a huge part in that happening. So I'm going to go with Les Ames. And then, because I can't pick Seymour Clark, I'm going to go with probably Bob Taylor, who I think, if we're talking about just purely as a wicketkeeper, he had some of the skills that modern wicketkeepers have, the ability to get to balls that are a long way away from him, which isn't the case for all older wicketkeepers. But was probably the best pure gloveman. And I did an article a few years ago about how much wicketkeeping had changed. And I talked to about, 35 wicketkeepers from various ages, from, people who wicketkept in the 50s all the way through. Bob Taylor was the one they said was the best technician they had ever seen, who had the, because a lot of those old wicketkeepers, they have brilliant hands, but the footwork hadn't developed. And modern wicketkeepers are incredible athletes, but generally don't have very good hands because most of them grow up as batters and then get they only get gloves when they make representative teams. So I'm going to go Bob Taylor, who I think if you go and have a look at some of the highlights of some of the takes that he, some of the wicketkeeping he did, I think he was probably a next level wicketkeeper and couldn't bat at all. Really, I don't think I'm not sure if he even averaged 20 in Test cricket. So he was 100% there as a wicketkeeper. So I'm going to go with those two gentlemen.
Picks. We could see them from a mile away.
Yep. But just so that you're both aware, cricket actually does go before 1990 as well.
I just have not one question. Do either one of them look like serial killers too?
No, I don't think Les Ames did. There is, do you know, I don't know if I've ever told you this, Estelle, but I used to do a thing on Instagram where I used to put up a picture of a cricketer and say cricketer or a serial killer. And like, it was always cricketers. That was one of the jokes that I did. And everyone always thought that they were serial killers. I think there is some good, actually, and I'm looking at Les Ames. Les Ames might actually pass as a serial killer. I don't think Bob Taylor had a big floppy white hat. He was a bit more friendly. Les Ames.
Serial killer. What are you talking about? That is convict written all over it.
I was thinking that perhaps he could have done other crimes, just not serial killing. But yeah, he's got a bit of a standover man face. Do you know what I mean? He's the sort of guy that turns up if you haven't paid your bills.
Yeah, he's the sort of guy
I don't think Bob Taylor would qualify, right? He looks
now. Bob Taylor definitely
innocent.
Not serial killer face.
Les Ames is the sort of guy who you'd leave your car with because you think he's a mechanic, but then he'll steal it.
Yeah, exactly. That's his kind of face. That's a very accurate way of putting it. But yeah, I will let you know if there's any more players that I have that potentially have serial killer face in future, because that apparently is now a thing. Or maybe one day we'll do a Crick Picks quiz, and I'll just put up photos of players and you will have to decide whether they are former cricketers or serial killers.
Yeah, I think that there's definitely an idea over there. All right, Estelle, it's back to you.
Back to me. I'm going with the Sri Lankan, but not the Sri Lankan that Bairam is thinking about. I'm going with Prasanna
Jayawardena. Interesting, who are you going with?
Prasanna Jayawardena was the wicketkeeper who, I mean, you hear about how the English talk about Ben Folkes right now, right? Prasanna Jayawardena was that for Sri Lanka in the 2000s. He could bat. He didn't make many big scores, but he could bat. But there was a long time he was left out of the team because of Sangha, right? In terms of wicket keeping itself, one of the most skilled players I think we've ever seen. Obviously I'm picking him as my number two pick, but I don't know if you can argue he's not top 15 because he was that good behind the stumps and unfortunately played only Test cricket. He may have represented Sri Lanka in ODIs, but he was completely confined to Test cricket, unfortunately, and we didn't get to see what skills he could offer in the limited overs game, but still he's spoken about as probably the best keeper who's come out of Sri Lanka.
Yeah, I mean, he was phenomenal, right? His movement. So if you talk about Bob Taylor, so I was talking about Bob Taylor as being someone who sort of combined the old style of wicketkeeping with the new style of wicketkeeping. And I think Prasanna is the most skillful wicketkeeper we have seen at top level professional cricket, just because of all the things that people like Bob Taylor and, you know, and Darren Berry and Alan Knott and Godfrey Evans developed. Prasanna Jayawardena almost could perfect all of those skills. But it's funny that you talk about Ben Folkes, because I remember talking to England cricket when Ben Folkes was coming through, and I said kind of what's the plan, and they were like, well, we want a Prasanna Jayawardena if we can have one. We don't know if we're going to use him all the time, and they were saying to me that they and you know, in that conversation, so I then stopped talking about Ben Folkes and started asking him about Prasanna Jayawardena, but they were basically saying that they thought he was the best wicketkeeper they had seen as far as every individual skill that you were talking about to have. You know, ridiculous talent that he had. He ended up averaging almost 30 in Test match cricket. I mean, I think that was maybe quite friendly, having seen him bat. But
the early part of his career, you're right, it looked like he could just about hold the bat.
He did get better at the end.
He did get better. Yeah.
No, that's right. If you need your pitch change, well, NordVPN can doctor any surface to a new location so that your IP address is set for you to win.
Want to watch a game on a free stream in another hemisphere? Give NordVPN the ball. Or if you just want to watch a clip on social media that a cricket board won't allow, promote NordVPN to pinch hit. So if you need a VPN, go Nord. Use nordvpn.com/Kimber to get a 2-year contract with a discount, plus 4 extra months and gifts in some markets. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. The link is in the show notes. Protect your computer like a bowler protects the boundaries in the death overs with nordvpn.com/Kimber today.
And I mean, just the fact that he survived as more or less a specialist keeper in an era where they were looked down upon, you know, that kind of speaks volumes. But I'm so happy that you guys did not go for the obvious picks, because now you've given me 2 consecutive picks and it's just so easy for me, because, well, the second one for me would be MS Dhoni, because why not? He's got 294 dismissals in 90 test matches, which is a pretty high rate of dismissals as well. And sure, the average of 38, you feel like Dhoni was a better batter than that. But I just think purely as a wicketkeeper, there are few behind the stumps who have been as sly as Dhoni and as cunning. And they would basically, all those cheeky runouts and that sort of stuff. And then
Dhoni's problem isn't behind the stumps, is it? It's standing back. He's not very good. He just wasn't a particularly good wicketkeeper standing back. It's like he was a really good athlete who somehow would not go for a ball like a meter to his right every time, right? He's a really, really interesting one. But standing up to the stumps, he's revolutionary in kind of having hard hands that don't go back, so getting quicker stumpings than anyone else. And as you said, all the sly stuff and the runouts and the way that he thought. But standing back, which is, you know, a big part of being a test wicketkeeper, is getting the edges. Not really his thing, but I think the other reason he's looked down on as a test keeper is because, as you said, only an average of 38. That's still really high for a wicketkeeper, even in his era.
Yeah,
like, you know, and I don't think it gets the respect that it should, because partly because MS Dhoni was so good in white ball cricket, he just wasn't that kind of force in test cricket. I think you've got him too high, but he definitely has to be on this list.
I mean, my turn was going to come after eons again, so I really wanted to lock down Dhoni, because ultimately people are going to vote for Dhoni, right? You have to think about that as well.
I love the crowd. Estelle is picking people that she likes. You're playing to the crowd, and I was like, you realize that everyone, they used to play cricket before there were cameras.
Yeah, role reversals over the course of all of these episodes. But I mean, I would still have Dhoni in my top 5, so I'm pretty content with that pick. Third pick is also fairly standard. I'll go with Mark Boucher.
Whoa!
The most number of dismissals ever, which is 555. And he stuck around test cricket for 147 test matches. The average is fairly poor, you know, 30, which is, I mean, it doesn't speak volumes. But I mean, Boucher is still known as one of, you know, the greats of the game.
Wasn't even on my shortlist.
Really?
Wasn't even on my shortlist. No, on my long list, I should say. I don't think he was that good a wicketkeeper, and he wasn't that good at bat. Like, I still find it hard to believe that they couldn't find a better wicketkeeper than Boucher for that long. I honestly believe that. I've never really understood the whole Mark Boucher thing. He was a good wicketkeeper, don't get me wrong, but he's not like a Dhoni or Prasanna J. Wardner level wicketkeeper, and he averaged the same as Prasanna J. Wardner, right? Like, he was a. Okay. It's almost like people thought, oh, he's a tough little guy. He's kind of like a Matthew Wade with slightly better wicketkeeping. Like, he's okay. I don't think people would disagree with you having him on, but it just, for me, he's not particularly good at any of the things that I kind of rate, other than the fact he played a lot.
This slander for someone who took a bail to the eye, Jared. Hey, look, how insensitive.
I mean, that is the one thing I'll give him credit. The man actually literally lost eyesight from wicketkeeping, which is probably not that common. But yeah, I don't know. Did you have him on your list, Estelle?
I had him on my long list, but I think it's interesting, right? Because you mentioned it's weird that they didn't really have anybody else keeping for South Africa, right? During that entire period. So part of it is probably, I mean, his record. Part of it is probably that he's the only one who played. But I'm just looking at the numbers now. It's crazy to imagine he's averaging the same as Prasanna Jayawardena, right?
Yes, that's what I mean.
He was thought of as a really good batter, but he never...
Everyone always talked about him that. Sometimes he would bat at 9, right? And it's like people just ignored the fact that he was batting down the order. And it used to drive... They used to go, oh, they got so many all-rounders. I said, yeah, he's also not very good at batting. Right? Like, let's be honest, he's not moving down the order. Like, and the interesting thing is he took over from Dave Richardson, who I think was more or less a very similar cricketer, right? Dave Richardson was not a great wicketkeeper or a very good batter. And between the two of them, they must have been keeping for South Africa for like 20 years. It's so random that they never tried other players, or they didn't have other players, that would come through. I've always found that really interesting with Mark Boucher, because he's ended
Has a wicketkeeper ever kept for 147 test matches?
I wouldn't have thought so.
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
Give all credit to his fingers, because well done for actually being able to get through that many. Ian Healy, although Ian Healy was coming to the end of his career, Ian Healy probably kept for a similar amount of year span, I would have thought. It's really hard to do it for that long. It's a painful, taxing job on your body. And your athleticism does go in wicketkeeping, even if your other skills don't. So I give Boucher complete credit for that. But, I was shocked. That was not the direction I thought you were going to go.
Well, he's my longevity pick, guys. All right?
Okay.
That's fair.
Anyway, so
are you done? You had two, right? Okay.
Yeah, I got my two.
Okay, back to me. I'm going with Ian Healy. He was, to my generation at least, like the OG, really good behind the stumps keeper, right? Because in the mid-90s, we started getting those guys who are more batters than keepers. I think what makes guys like him and Prasanna Jayawardena so good is it's so fluid, right? The way they move and the way they take the ball. There are no, sudden movements, and you hardly ever notice them in the game because the mistakes are so low. So I think he should be an automatic pick. I think if I didn't pick him, he was probably going to get picked somewhere down the line anyway.
I had him on my long list. I don't know if I would have slipped him in. It's tricky, isn't it? Because, again, didn't make a lot of runs, was a plucky batter, but didn't make a lot of runs. What you're talking about with the movement is really what him and Prasanna Jayawardena had, which really Dhoni and Boucher don't, and Gilchrist had a little bit of, is footwork. And it's what you see with modern wicketkeepers. They just don't have that level of footwork. Like, if you watch Ian Healy go down the leg side to medium-fast bowlers, it's like modern wicketkeepers are just turning around watching the ball go behind them, right? They just don't have that. And I think he was absolutely incredible. Plus, in Jayawardena and Healy, you have two guys who probably were improved as wicketkeepers because of who they kept to, right? If you're keeping to Warne and Murali, right, like, the ball spitting and bouncing and, ripping and footmarks and all these different things that those two got to bowl with. I just think, like, you can't, you would watch Gilchrist at times to Warne, and you'd be thinking to yourself that Gilchrist is there, and if it's a fine edge, he's going to get it. But anything else, he's never going to be in the right position to get any of those. And that's not, as I said, he's certainly not a terrible wicketkeeper compared to modern standards, right? But with Healy and Jayawardena, they are getting to catches that normal wicketkeepers are looking around to see if someone's going to go get that ball for them, right? And so I think Healy's incredible from that point of view. Really interesting too that up until Healy, Australia did not rate batting at all, right? Mm. India had toyed with people who could bat. England certainly did. The West Indies did, all the way through. And teams were starting to come to it, and Australia were like, no, we always think the best wicketkeeper. And then Gilchrist changes Australian cricket just by being so much better with the bat. And there were at least four wicketkeepers in Sheffield Shield cricket better than Gilchrist at that time. And I don't know if you know this, Gilchrist was booed when he played his first test for Australia.
Oh, yeah.
Is that because he switched states, right?
No. It was because the test was at the Gabba. I think even in Australian cricket, they thought that Healy was on the decline, but perhaps people in Brisbane were not as fully aware of that. Healy was fantastic. I think, again, as you were saying before, it's the ability to get to balls that other people don't get to because of using your feet. So modern wicketkeeping looks spectacular because everyone dives, whereas old wicketkeeping doesn't look as spectacular because they use their feet, right? And when I talked to the old wicketkeepers, they were like, you should never dive. If you use your feet, you won't drop it. Whereas if you dive, you're like a 50-50 chance of taking the catch. And I think Healy was a perfect example of someone who had a little bit of athleticism as well. So he could dive a little bit. So he could look sensational up at the stumps and back.
I mean, there was enough talent over there that some of it got transferred to his niece.
Yeah. So I mean, literally, there's that as literally well. It's in their blood that they can wicketkeep in the Healy yeah. family. Because I think her dad, his brother, also was a wicketkeeper, right? I think I'm right in saying that there is multiple wicketkeepers in that. And she also married a wicketkeeper because, of course, Mitchell Starc was a wicketkeeper as a kid. So I'd say at a certain point, it's got a little bit incestuous with the wicketkeeping with the Healy family, right?
Yeah, a little bit of left arm pace, but yeah, definitely have a point over.
All right.
There. He's on my long list.
Yeah.
Not my short list.
I think that's fair. All right, I've got two English wicketkeepers, so that will be uncomfortable if I go with another English wicketkeeper at this point. And I've lost Jaya Wardner. Okay. I am going to go BJ Watling.
I had him. He was my next pick.
Because I think, I don't know what happened with BJ Watling, but somewhere along the line, like, he didn't get the credit that he deserved. And I think it's probably because he batted so friggin' boring, right? but this is a guy who was good enough to get into the team as a specialist batter, didn't make it work, and then came back as a wicketkeeper and was a backbone of the first ever World Test Championship winning team.
Yeah. And then retired right after winning that World Test.
And I think maybe if you
talk about a fairy tale.
Exactly. Right? And what was his final average? Was it just over 40, I think, with the bat?
37.52, but that is 265 dismissals in 75 tests. That is a high number for not many
tests. Yeah, I just think that, I think his wicketkeeping was really high level when he played. Maybe, well, during his career, Ridhiman Saha is probably a slightly better wicketkeeper. I don't know if there is anyone else really that much better with a wicketkeeper, but his ability to bat at number six, right, really transformed what New Zealand could do as a lineup. And maybe it's a bit too punchy to have him this high, but I do think he was, in his generation, a top-level wicketkeeper and also still a really strong batter. And a lot of his career also overlaps with the wobble ball era. So a lot of the wicketkeepers, you know, there was a lot of wicketkeepers averaging really high numbers and they suddenly all drop off completely. I don't have to tell Estelle about Chandamal. But, you know, there's a few guys like that who really, really struggled when the ball started to nip around a little bit because they were good flat pitch batters, but they weren't particularly good when the ball was nibbling around. And then after that, and I could probably swap the order of these two as well, but then I'll go Andy Flower. I thought Andy Flower was more of a serviceable wicketkeeper, but just absolutely, like, you know, Andy Flower.
You've stolen both my picks, basically.
Mine as well.
Oh, wow. That's even better. Well, that is sensational.
He's the only wicketkeeper batter to be averaging 50, over 50.
Yeah.
By
yeah. Only reason I have him lower is some of that batting is obviously in Smalls Test Series and against other smaller nations as well, you know, coming up and everything else. But I think he's probably the only wicketkeeper batter that I would have in the top 50 of all. And I mean, sorry, as someone who was a wicketkeeper all the way through their career, because there's obviously Walcott and Kumar as well, but I think he's probably the only batter who's legitimately in the top 50 batters of all time list, although Gilchrist is an argument because of his strike rate as well. My memory of Flower's wicketkeeping was never that exciting. And you could have, and I like wicketkeeping so much that I kind of feel like I need to change it. But I tell you what I'm going to do, because these are both my picks, I'm going to move Watling to my fourth pick and put Flower as my third pick, because I should have said Flower before him. But yeah, he was a fantastic player. And if he hadn't played for Zimbabwe, he would have got a lot more respect for everything that he did. But a fantastic career.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
I think you're in pole position to win this now after those two picks.
Yeah, and I'm really stuck now because those were going to be my last two.
Ooh, I like that. Then now I'm really happy with my picks.
Okay, so I'll go with one that's, since I picked three based on purely their wicket keeping skills, I go with a batter now. Quinton de Kock, just for the kind of impact he had. He was maybe the closest since Gilchrist to that role, right? Where he was the kind of enforcer. Wasn't bad behind the stumps as well. Just his longevity, as well as kind of the role he played within that team, which was a really successful South African team during his tenure as well, right? At least for the early parts of it. I think he's one that is who's hard to look past if you're picking a team where you want someone who can score runs quickly as well in the middle order.
Yeah, I think the strike rate's really important with him as well. Mm. His wicket-keeping is okay. I don't think he sticks out as bad in this modern era. I think if he played in, you know, before 2005, perhaps he would be seen as a fairly poor wicket-keeper of that era. But in this era, I don't think he sticks out as bad, or, you know, there's no Johnny Bairstow type questions, you know, with his wicket-keeping. Mm. Apologies to Johnny. I think that's good. He was on my long list. I didn't really know where to put him in. And also, it's funny because you got Quinton de Kock, because there is Kumar Sangakkara and Clive Walcott as well. Mm. And I didn't know where to put them because they stopped wicket-keeping.
Yeah. Right?
And in Walcott's case, it's probably because he was too tall. He was one of the first really tall wicket-keepers, and apparently he just hurt his back to get down into that position over and over again. And obviously with Kumar, he was like, I don't need to do this. I'll just bat. which is, again, a very fair way of
thinking about it. No, actually, he wanted to keep keeping, apparently. Like, he did not want to. I mean, Kumar.
But also they had Jay Wardner there, right? Which is slightly different than some other situations. But so Quinton de Kock, I think, is certainly, you know, again, you know, a top level player. Did you have him on your list, Bayram? Mm.
Yes, I did. But I was not, like, he was on my long list. I was just a little unsure because I do have one wicketkeeper that I really want in there that will be my next pick. But it was confusing. He was my backup pick. Okay. You know, if things go extremely south, then I'll go Quinny. Next pick for me, I have two in a row and then I'm done. Now I'm going to go for someone who not just was known for his wicket-keeping skills, but actually put a price on his wicket, as I'm told. Missed that era, but this is someone who is spoken of really highly in terms of wicket-keeping and a bit revolutionary when it comes to spin bowling and keeping versus spinners, especially Alan Knott.
Yeah.
He played 95 test matches as well, right? 269 dismissals might seem a bit low because England were kind of shit or started to become a little terrible by the time he, you know, was keeping wicket. He still averages 32.75 with the bat in that era, which I think is quite high. Like, you talked about the multiplier thing with Les Ames. He probably is a plus-plus batter with that average in that era.
Yeah,
right?
I think I think early on in his career, there was a period where he had a better average, and then he came back. Yeah, I'm just having a look at it now. So he goes off and stops playing cricket for England and plays in World Series cricket, right? Comes back in 1980 after 3 years off and averages 5. So he tanks his average a bit at the end. Like, I think he was probably going to be a slightly better. He was going to end up with a slightly better mark altogether in Test cricket. But yeah, I think you've said everything. He was a really tidy wicketkeeper. He kept Bob Taylor out of the side, even though they thought Bob Taylor was obviously a much better wicketkeeper. But because Alan Knott was such a good wicketkeeper, but could still bat. And if you talk to old heads, he's kind of that first where teams start to go, wait a minute. If we cut someone who could actually bat here, you know, we might actually have something else going on. So, you know, 5 test hundreds. I can't imagine outside of, you know, Les Ames or Clive Walcott, there would be many wicketkeepers with multiple test hundreds before Alan Knott, right? There weren't that many wicketkeepers with test hundreds before Alan Knott, let alone multiple. So absolutely, a fantastic wicketkeeper. And he spent a lot of time keeping to Derek Underwood as well. And Derek Underwood was like one of the really quick spinners. So we know he could keep up to the stumps. There's a stumping that I tweeted, a catch that I tweeted years ago of, like, it's just ridiculous that he even gets to this ball. He's up at the stump. So he must have had a really good eye for seeing what was happening ahead of time, you know, and getting to those positions. But he was certainly on my list as well. When I was saying before, I've already got 2 English people. It was Alan Knott. I was kind of thinking of whether I wanted to go another England player, but I'm pretty happy that he's on this list, but I think I'm happy with the other 2 guys I've got as well.
Yeah, no, I think you should be happy with your picks because they were going to be mine. look, for people who, you know, have started following cricket in the late 90s and early 2000s, even all of them have heard of Alan Knott.
Yeah.
You know, it's a name everyone knows of and it is synonymous with wicket keeping. So I definitely felt like he deserved to be in this list. Now I'm conflicted. Okay. On one hand, there is one of my favorite players of all time in Kumar Sangakkara. And I know that he stopped keeping, but I do rate his keeping highly. And on one hand, I have Alex Stewart, you know, who played 133 test matches and averaged nearly 40. And as you mentioned,
didn't average 40 as a wicketkeeper, though. What was his average as a wicketkeeper?
How would I know that?
Oh, come on, how do you not know that? I would have just assumed that all children grew up looking at Alex Stewart's
34 is the average, I think.
That's not too bad.
It's not too bad, but I think they ruined his career by making him a wicketkeeper. I think that was the not ruined his career, ruined his impact as a cricketer, because he was so phenomenally good. And they really did make him, not play as much. So look, he still ended up okay, but it's not the impact he should have had.
I once wrote a piece when I was like a teenager for the Express Tribune, in which I talked about the revolutionary role of a wicketkeeper batter, and I had, you know, the names of Alex Stewart and Gilchrist. And it was more so about Gilchrist. It was like me fanboying over Gilly, more or less. And then it had Sangha in it as well. And here we are, where I'm conflicted between these two players. But I just feel like Sangha gave up the role too early, you know? And he just doesn't have that volume of wicketkeeping. So what do I do over here? You guys have given me information
about Alex Stewart.
It's an
interesting one, because you picked two guys who actually are not specialist wicketkeepers, right? Because both of them... So, I mean, this is what I always find funny about, and I've written about this, and one day I'll make a whole video on Alex Stewart wicketkeeping, because I think it's one of the most interesting selection decisions in the history of the game, because they had Jack Russell, right? Jack Russell averages 27, and Alex Stewart averages 34. So they gave up one of the most transformative wicketkeepers I have ever seen in Jack Russell, right, for a guy who averaged 7 more with the bat. And they ruined one of their best batters in the process. So I think if they had actually kept Alex Stewart as a batter and Jack Russell as a wicketkeeper, they would have got more runs per game out of that combination than they did have than they did by actually going the other way. But the point being is, neither of those guys kept all as much as they could have. I don't know if that's making it any easier, but if I remember correctly, I think didn't Jack Russell end up pretty high up? Didn't Alex Stewart end up pretty high up on the total runs? He's like fourth highest in total runs as wicketkeepers. So he's still up there. I mean, you're not wrong.
Yeah, it is a tough one. I think I'm going to go Alex Stewart, because Prasanna Jayawardene came in pretty early into the scene. I love Sangha. A part of my heart is broken that he's not on my list, and it probably would have won me this round.
Would have.
But I just have...
I think you might have tanked it again.
Might have. You never know. But Gut was saying Alex Stewart, and so I'll go with Alex Stewart.
I will make a video on it one day, because I've got about 4,000 words of notes on it, because it is absolutely fascinating, Alex Stewart, from beginning to end and what he did. I think did a lot for wicketkeepers becoming neater. And I don't mean that in wicketkeeping, but, wearing a cap, not a floppy, looking immaculate behind the stumps. And that is 70% of the job, right? How you dress.
Absolutely. And that wraps up my picks. Yep. Estelle, I think you have your last pick coming up.
Yeah, can I just say how interesting it is that your two options were one guy who was a good batter and then became a wicketkeeper and his batting dropped, and a guy who was an okay keeper and gave that up and became a great batter, right?
Yeah.
He's having the same conversation twice, isn't he?
tricky contrast, wasn't it? Well, he took Andy Flower, right? I should have taken Flower over Boucher if I really have to read.
You're right. You've stuffed that up, haven't you?
Yeah, that's what I should have done. I was fine with losing BJ Watling, okay? But Andy Flower really hurt.
Okay, so my last pick.
Okay, Estelle.
Part of me wants to go with Ben Folkes, because he is... In modern day cricket, he's got to be the best keeper, right? I mean, it's tough.
Yeah,
it's
I think Saha was slightly better, but Saha wasn't always in the side, right? So Ben Folkes, Ben Folkes is always in the side either, right at the moment, it would be Ben Folkes, right? And, a couple of years ago, it probably would have been Ridman Saha.
Yeah, well, I did say I was going to, part of me wants to go with Folkes, but I'm going to pick Ridhiman Saha because...
Oh. I didn't mean that. I was just, okay.
Oh my God. Why would you guys not pick Sanga? Why is Sanga not on this?
Someone because he stopped being a keeper and it made him a better player.
It's true.
Yeah, it did.
But to be fair,
and also Sanga.
I'm so happy.
Like Sanga did have his flaws. I have seen him mess up behind the stumps as well, right?
No, just on Sanga. I think, I mean, he still had an average of like 40 plus as a wicketkeeper bat in Test cricket, which is pretty great, right? But we're just comparing it.
So did Matt Prior, Estelle.
But you know that
Matt Prior is a really good keeper batter, though. I think we're sleepy on Matt Prior. If Matt Prior would have ended up averaging about 42 or 43 if it wasn't for the Achilles at the end of his career. And people would think about him very differently if he ended up with a magical mark up there. But let's talk about, look, this is how much Ridham and Saha gets overlooked, that even when we talk about Ridham and Saha, no one's talking about Ridham and Saha. I can tell you that Matt Prior thought Ridham and Saha was the best wicketkeeper in the world, by the way. But anyway.
Do you remember that Uncovered episode in which we were debating whether India should have just gone to Saha over KS Bharat for the World Test Championship final?
Yeah.
You know, that was the logic that if you want to go for a specialist keeper, might as well go with Saha.
Might as well just go with the guy that's really good.
Yeah,
he got overlooked a lot, right? Because it's funny because I don't think his batting is as bad as people made it out to be either, right? He's not a terrible batsman. It's just that he was so exceptional behind the stumps that people thought that was his only skill. He's just the guy who had to make it to this 15 because he was so overlooked for India, right? I mean, we've got a lot of flashy players in the 15, or few flashy players, and Sanga would have been another flashy player. He was a decent keeper. I'm not saying he's not, but like keeping wise and going by the other three keepers I've picked, the top three I've picked, I think on keeping skills, Saha has to be up there.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. The whole argument with Kumar and Clyde Walcott, because it's almost identical for both of them. They both go on to be great batters, but they both average 40 while wicketkeeping. It is a really interesting argument to be had, right? Of where those sorts of players fit in when you're looking at the best. And then, you know, look at, you know, guys like Wasim Barry, right? And Wally Grout and, you know, Don Tallon, who are obviously great wicketkeepers, but in an era where they didn't have to bat. So do we mark them down because, you know, I mean, if you look at the early sides, it happens every time, but it's quite regular that you see wicketkeepers batting at number 11, right? It's not really till the 70s and 80s that it becomes the position you bat at number 7 is just automatically the wicketkeeper's position. And so it takes a long time for that to happen. And that to move on. And it is really, really interesting. Am I trying to work out who I'm going to come up with last and taking as much time here as possible? Yes, I am.
Maybe you are.
So I'm a little bit torn because I do think there's... I kind of want Kamani and Farooq Engineer to be mentioned as well, because I think they were, you know, and I just mentioned Wasim Barry and Don Tallon. I think there's, you know, and a lot of people, I think, all my wicketkeeping books kind of have Godfrey Evans as the number one wicketkeeper of all time, especially in the early part of cricket. But I'm torn between two people, and it's Rishabh Pant, who it's maybe too early in his career, and I feel a little bit awkward about his wicketkeeping at times. And then I'm going with Jack Blackham, who again apparently will come up on every cricket.
The guy with the facial hair.
Yeah. So Jack Blackham was known as the greatest wicketkeeper kind of before 1900. He was known as the Prince of Wicketkeepers. Clearly had worked out a method before everyone else had. Remember that, you know, a lot of early wicketkeeping, there weren't always pads around. So wicketkeepers usually quite often stood a mile back, or they stood up close like slip fielders and just let the ball go through them if it looked like it was going to hurt them. Jack Blackham was certainly of a different level of that, and really like being up at the stumps and like the artistry of it. And I don't know, I can't remember his record, but I don't think he made any runs really at all. So it's between him and Rishabh Pant. Let's have a look at our list. What do we need? What do we need in this list?
We need a Mushafiqur Rahim.
that is uncalled for. Absolutely uncalled for to slander him. I will not even slander him. Bring him up on this list. It's just unfair to him. So we've got Ridham and Saha. We've got Alex Stewart. at the end. We didn't get Kumar or Clive Walcott.
No Matt Prior. Still a good pick.
I think Matt Prior is a really good pick, but I think Rishabh would be ahead of him. Matt Prior would probably argue with that, but I think Rishabh would slightly be ahead of him. And then I'm going to go Rishabh Pant because I'm this is a little bit of a protection pick. Obviously, we don't know how he's going to come back from his injury. And, you know, we've seen, I mean, Johnny Bairstow hasn't come back particularly well from his broken bones, right? So we don't know if Rishabh Pant's going to get back to the level that he used to be at. But I thought the trajectory he was on was probably top 7-8 wicket keepers of all time when he got injured. I'm willing to think that that is still where he will go. And Jack Blackham, I still got to talk about him. So in some ways, I still win this. So I'll go with Rishabh Pant. And if he'd played Test cricket for the last, whatever it was, year and a half, 2 years, he could have kind of would have been much higher, wouldn't he? I'm not, you guys agree with that?
So for me, I wanted to have both Pant and Rizwan in my lists, but it was the sample size that got to me. That's where I was like, nah.
Yeah, I get that. I get that. I think Rizwan's a step behind. So I would have Rishabh Pant based on what I've seen ahead of Quinton de Kock, right? The impact that he has as a batter, and I think he's a slightly better wicketkeeper. Even if he sometimes looks messier than Quinton de Kock, I think he's better up at the stumps, for instance. So if he played a little bit more cricket, I'd be very comfortable here. And I think Jack Blackham is absolutely incredible. But there's a lot of really good specialist wicketkeepers. And if you have a look at our list, to be fair, we've got Bob Taylor, Alan Knott, Sarah Taylor. We've got all the Taylors. We've got Prasanna, Healy, Rinnaman Saad. I think we've been quite fair to specialist wicketkeepers on this list. So picking another really old one, whether it be Godfrey Evans or Jack Blackham or Don Tallon or any of those guys, I think is we don't need to do that. Whereas Rishabh Pant is the future of wicketkeeping. So we're going to slot him in at number 15 so that in a couple of years' time when we do this list, I'm going to look like a genius and you are both of you going to look like idiots for not having him on.
All right, then let's do some notable absentees before you can tell everyone our picks. Does Baz make it to your lists? Because I was so confused.
I didn't think he was a brilliant wicketkeeper. He's a brilliant
also
athlete.
He quit keeping and hit a triple 100.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So
yeah, I mean, he wasn't better than BJ Watling, was he? Like, if we're being honest. In fact, McCullum said that. I think McCullum was quite honest that that's why they wanted BJ Watling to come in, right? So I didn't have him on my list. I think I have about 15 names. He probably would have been around 16, 17. I could make an argument that I think I'd have McCullum over Boucher, though. But I don't think you would make a claim that McCullum should be ahead of anyone else on this list. Do you have anyone else, Estelle?
Yeah, I was thinking Jack Russell, actually.
He's on my long list.
I didn't see much of him growing up, obviously, but he's always had a really good reputation, right? As being a really good keeper.
Yeah.
Him and I kind of flirted with the idea of Tatendra Taibu as well. He was good behind the stumps, but you know, when you have Andy Flower, it's tough to compare the two, right?
Just on Jack Russell.
Yeah, Jack Russell.
I think Jack Russell.
Unfortunately, he didn't make it to our facial hair list either, and he missed out on the keepers.
I had him in my long list. Well, yeah, Jack Russell. As well.
Maybe least fashionable cricketers he might make if we ever do a one on that. Look, Jack Russell was absolutely brilliant.
And also people who also have dogs with the same name. Dog means.
So interesting fact, his name is not Jack. His name is something else. I looked him up and it's not Jack.
Yeah. What is it then?
I can't remember, but it's not Jack. He's right. I don't know if that means it's a nickname or just something that everyone called him because his surname was Russell. I thought with Jack Russell that once I had Bob, I think Bob Taylor was just better. And we had Alan Knott, who was in that probably the same thing. But if you haven't seen Jack Russell keep, there are some great clips online of him as well. Even when I talked to the best wicketkeepers, they all thought Bob Taylor was slightly ahead of him. But he was fantastic as well. And, you know, having Prasanna Jayawardene and Rinnaman Saha, I think it kind of, you know, we have a couple of guys who are on that. I talked about Clyde Walcott before, who I think is, might have changed cricket forever if he kept wicketkeeping at that period. There's a really interesting one too. There's a guy called Jim Parkes. If you go back and have a look, who was one of the first ever manufactured wicketkeepers. in the 60s. And so he was, I don't even think he was a full-time county wicketkeeper, and he ended up wicketkeeping for England. What about Joss Butler?
No, I didn't have him.
Because he can't, I mean, Joss Butler famously couldn't get a stumping in red ball cricket. It's like, it was, he was almost allergic to stumping. But he had some pretty good impact with the bat. I mean, again, it's a bit like MS Dhoni. We look at him now as if he wasn't that good, but you go back and look at his record and go, this actually still looks pretty good, right? Like, it's still right up there. You didn't have Sarfraz, by the way, Bairam.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking about Sarfraz and Rashid the Thief, but then there were better keepers out there over there, I felt. And if you really wanted to go specialist wicketkeeper, then Wasim Bari was that guy, right?
I think so. Yeah, I think Wasim Bari and Jack Russell are probably the two guys really unlucky not to make this list.
I think Sarfraz was really good catching those low balls. That's what he was really good at, right? Pryor was in my longer list as well. I mean, you shat on Jeff Dujon very early on, but I think I had him just because I really liked his flashy nature of batting. He was really good.
I just meant that even if you talk to Jeff Dujon, he would say he was not the best. He was picked partly because he could bat. He was at that generation. He was an incredible athlete though, and a really great thinker on the game. One of my favorite cricketers. I don't have an issue with him, but you know, him and Rod Marsh, they also weren't really tested against great spinners. In fact, you know, neither of them really had to do that part of it. It's a kind of a fun major part of the game. You also missed out Cameron Akmal, but we can
how could I miss Cameron?
You're very unlucky just to miss that list. None of us mentioned AB de Villiers.
Thought about
it.
I did think about it. I was like, he's talented enough to be there, but again, didn't keep all that much, even though he still has 100 plus dismissals as keeper.
Was he a natural keeper, or was he just really athletic and
he was a natural everything.
I saw him almost get hit in the face taking a standard delivery once. He was not a natural keeper, I can tell you that. He could do it. I don't think in modern cricket he'd be seen as terrible. The one thing I felt interesting about him was he's the one great batter who actually has a great batting average while wicketkeeping, because he averages 57. But I do think if you think back to Kumar and Walcott, they both wicketkeep early in their career before they become great batters. So maybe with de Villiers, it was slightly different, you know, just a slightly different sort of situation. Just to talk about the great West Indies as well, you know, there's obviously Murray from the West Indies, who everyone, he had a 17-year career wicketkeeping for the West Indies. And he was obviously absolutely fantastic. And just one last one of modern times is Tom Blundell.
Oh, yeah. Blundell is pretty good.
I mean, I don't think he gets ahead of Rishabh Pant, but he's pretty good.
Yeah, I'd say so. I just didn't want to go with any modern ones because I felt like I had this 50-test limitation that I was putting on myself. That's what I was doing, right, while selecting these. But yeah, still very heartbroken that Sangha didn't make it. Very, very heartbroken.
Should we go through the list?
Yes.
All right. Who went first? Bairam went first, and he had Adam Gilchrist, MS Dhoni, Mark Boucher, Alan Knott, and Alex Stewart. Still in second. She had Sarah Taylor, Prasanna Jayawardena, Ian Healy, Quinton de Kock, and Ridhiman Saha. And I went third, and I had Les Ames, Bob Taylor, Andy Flower, BJ Watling, and Rishabh Pant.
All right, then. Whoever thinks won this round, let us know in the comment section below. And let us also know if we've missed a wicketkeeper, what your top five would have been. That's it for this week. We'll see you again next week for another episode of Crick Picks. But yeah, if you like this video, like it down over there and share it with your friends and subscribe to both this channel and Jared's other channel. That'll be all for today. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bairam Kazi and Estelle Vassadevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work.
If you make a lot of content like me, oh, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.